All right, we're diving deep today into UK crisis teams. These are the people on the ground, when someone's facing a mental health crisis. We've got a whole bunch of stuff to dig through: articles, personal stories, even some training materials, really getting a sense of how these teams work, the kind of impact they have, and where they fit in the whole mental health support system. So get ready for 24/7 availability, home treatment options, the role families play. I think we've even got a fascinating bit of history in here.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's one of the things that really grabbed me, just seeing how these teams have evolved.
Oh, tell me about it.
It wasn't always like this integrated system.
Right.
To see how it's adapted, to meet these growing and complex mental health needs. I mean, it's pretty fascinating.
Okay, so let's get into it. For those who might not be totally familiar, what exactly are crisis teams? What's their core purpose?
Well, they're kind of like the first responders. If you think about it, like someone's mental well-being, it takes a sudden downturn, right? Maybe they're experiencing severe symptoms or an acute crisis. That's when the crisis team steps in.
Gotcha.
It's about immediate support, stabilizing the situation, making sure the person's safe. That's the priority.
So it's not just about rushing someone off to the hospital.
No, not at all. I mean, one of the things that really sets crisis teams apart is this focus on home treatment, community support.
Interesting.
The research actually shows that, whenever possible, helping people recover in their own environment, it often leads to better
I
outcomes.
see, I see.
We've got a case study actually in our sources about a young man, schizophrenia, and the crisis team was really, really instrumental in helping him manage his condition at home.
Wow.
He avoided hospitalization, kept his independence. Really powerful example of how this approach, it can work.
That is a powerful example. It makes you think about this whole thing like it's so much more nuanced than just, emergency response.
Right.
Now, you mentioned team. Who are the key players? How do they all work together?
Well, it's like this carefully coordinated group, each person bringing something different, special
Oh, like a
skills.
mental health A team.
Exactly.
Okay.
You've got your medical professionals, doctors, obviously. They're looking at any physical health concerns that might be tangled up with the crisis. Then you've got the mental health specialists, psychiatrists, nurses, social workers. Those are the people trained in diagnosis, risk assessment, all sorts of therapeutic interventions. And of course, we can't forget the support workers. They're the unsung heroes, right?
Yes, absolutely.
They help with those practical things, like daily living or connecting people with resources they need.
So it really is a team effort.
Absolutely. It's not a one-person show.
No. I'm hearing a lot of emphasis on collaboration here.
Oh, absolutely. That's key. Effective crisis intervention.
Yeah.
It relies on that. Everyone working together, like an orchestra. So the psychiatrist, maybe they're focusing on medication,
Right?
while the social worker is helping the person, with benefits or housing issues, you see.
I do, yeah.
It's about looking at the whole person, addressing the crisis from different angles.
Right.
And communication, that's essential. These teams, they have these systems in place, so everyone's in the loop, sharing information so they can give the best, most effective support.
Fascinating. It's really interesting how they've integrated all these different disciplines. Now, for our listener who might be thinking, okay, so when should I actually call a crisis team? What kind of situations warrant a call?
That's a really, really good question.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things for people is knowing when is the right time, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the takeaway here is if you're concerned about someone's mental well-being, it's always better to be safe than sorry.
Right.
Make the call. Crisis teams are there 24/7.
Wow.
They can assess the situation and figure out what needs to happen.
So it's not just about those big, scary situations we might imagine, right?
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Obviously, if someone's showing severe symptoms, psychosis, or talking about suicide, then immediate intervention, that's critical,
Of course.
But it's not limited to those extreme cases, right?
Right.
Maybe someone's having a panic attack they can't control, or their anxiety is just totally debilitating. Those are also valid reasons to call.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Remember, intervening early can often stop things from getting worse, turning into a full-blown crisis.
It's just good to know that that safety net is there,
Right.
even for those situations that maybe don't seem like crisis level at first.
Exactly. And it's not just a one-time thing either.
Oh.
Crisis teams, they offer a whole bunch of services, risk assessment, treatment planning, family support.
Yeah.
They're really there for the whole journey through the crisis and after.
Okay, so let's break down those services a bit. What exactly happens in a risk assessment? How do they figure out how much support someone needs?
Well, it's like it's a multi-layered process. Mm-hmm. You know, they look at the person's current mental state, any history of issues, their support network, their living situation, all of it.
Wow.
They're trained to spot those red flags, potential triggers, and they use, like, you know, official assessment tools to figure out how risky the situation is, how urgent it is.
Okay.
But it's not just about ticking boxes, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's really important to build that rapport, that trust, so the person feels safe enough to open up, you know?
So there's a real human element to it, as well as the clinical expertise.
Oh, absolutely. That human connection is essential to really understand what's going on.
Now, you mentioned treatment planning. Is that something they do right away, or does it come later?
It depends, really. If it's a super acute crisis, the focus is on stabilizing things, safety first.
Okay, makes sense.
But as things calm down, then the team works with the person to come up with a longer-term plan. Yep. Could involve connecting them with a therapist, maybe medication if that's needed, linking them with community resources like support groups or skills training, things like that.
So it goes back to that integrated approach we were talking about.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's not just the crisis team doing everything. It's about getting people the right kind of care within the whole mental health system.
All right. So what does this collaboration, you know, with other services actually look like in practice? How do they make sure someone doesn't just like fall through the cracks after the immediate crisis is over?
Well, one of the key things is these integrated care pathways.
Integrated care pathways.
Yeah, think of it like a roadmap,
yeah,
you know, for the person's journey through the mental health system.
Okay.
The crisis teams, like the central hub, coordinating everything. They talk to different providers, share information, really advocate for what the person needs.
I see.
So, for example, if someone needs ongoing therapy, the crisis team would work with their GP to refer them to, you know, a community mental health team. It's all about that smooth transition.
Wow, it's really impressive how much they think about making sure the care continues.
Mm.
It's not just putting out the fire, you know, it's about building this whole support system.
Yeah, it's that long-term view. And that's actually where families and carers come in.
Yes. Wow. The you call them the unsung heroes, right?
Exactly.
We talked about them briefly, but how do crisis teams specifically help families and carers? I mean, they're the ones on the front lines a lot of the time.
Right. And it's tough. Crisis teams know that. Supporting someone through a mental health crisis can be so challenging emotionally, practically, all of it. So they offer families a whole range of things.
Okay.
Like education about different mental health conditions, coping strategies. They even help with things like respite care.
Respite care, yeah.
And they're advocates too, helping families navigate the system, you know, connecting them with extra resources.
So it's really about empowering families.
Yes.
Giving them the knowledge, the tools, so they can support their loved ones, but also take care of themselves.
It's not just about the individual, you know, it's about everyone around them too.
Right, right. Well, this is all really fascinating. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll get into some of those ethical considerations.
Mm-hmm.
The importance of patient rights and all of this. So we've been really digging into like the mechanics of crisis teams,
mm-hmm,
you know, who's on them, how they work, the services, but what's the actual impact for the people they're helping?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, way beyond just resolving the immediate crisis.
Okay.
One thing that really stood out in the research was how much they focus on keeping people OUT of the hospital.
Oh, interesting.
By providing support in the community, crisis teams can help individuals recover in familiar places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they avoid the whole disruption of going to the hospital and the stigma that can sometimes come with that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And it actually reminds me of some stats I saw.
Oh, yeah.
It seems people who get that crisis support in the community, they tend to have lower relapse rates.
Yeah.
And they don't end up back in the hospital as often.
Exactly. It's not just a Band-Aid, you know. It's about setting people up for long-term stability.
It is. It is. And that early intervention part seems so key.
Oh, absolutely. Crisis teams are trained to see those early warning signs, those little things, and step in before everything blows up.
It's almost like instead of catching a falling leaf,
right?
It's more like seeing like the subtle shifts in the wind that might make the leaf fall in the first place.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, by intervening early, they can sometimes stop a crisis from even happening, potentially make the symptoms less severe, help people recover faster.
It's amazing. Now, we've been focusing on, you know, the positive side, but I'm curious about the challenges. What are some of the things that make it hard for these teams to be effective?
Well, one of the biggest hurdles, and this comes up a lot in what we read, is resources.
Resources, yeah.
To provide that 24/7 on-the-ground support, you know, across a big area, that takes a lot of funding.
Yeah, makes sense. And I imagine the demand for these services has just been, like, skyrocketing.
It has, absolutely.
Putting even more strain on things.
It's true. People are more aware of mental health now, which is great.
It is, yeah.
But it also means more people are asking for help. And the system, it's having trouble keeping up.
Right. So it really highlights the need for, you know, continued investment in mental health services.
Definitely, definitely.
What about staffing? I mean, we've talked about the expertise this work needs.
Mm-hmm.
Is it hard to find qualified people and to keep them?
It's a big worry, actually. The work is, it can be really demanding, emotionally draining, you
that
know?
Sure.
Burnout, compassion fatigue, those are real risks.
Yeah.
For anyone on the front lines of crisis care, so it's crucial to make sure the team members are okay so they can keep helping others, you know?
Yeah, you gotta take care of the caregivers. Okay, so we've really looked closely at this UK model, but what can we learn from it, like, for mental health care globally?
Well, I think one of the big lessons is that this community-based, person-centered approach, it really works.
Yeah.
It's not about just treating symptoms.
Right.
It's about understanding the whole person, their support system, their environment, everything.
It's that holistic view we keep coming back to.
Yes. It's recognizing that mental health, it's part of everything in someone's life.
It is. It is.
And crisis teams, they prove that if you prioritize collaboration, good communication, and making sure care continues, you can build a system that truly meets people's individual needs.
So what are some other elements of this model that, like, other healthcare systems could learn from?
Well, first off, being accessible is huge. That 247 availability of crisis teams.
Yeah.
That means help is there when people are most vulnerable, you know, in those critical moments.
Like having a safety net you can actually rely on.
Exactly. And then there's the collaboration and integration piece we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The crisis team is the hub, connecting people with GPs, therapists, social workers, whoever they need to have that full support network.
It's breaking down the silos that often exist in healthcare.
Yes. Making sure everyone's working together towards the same goal. And then finally, there's this focus on empowering people, giving them agency.
Okay.
Crisis teams don't tell people what to do.
Right.
They work with them, help them make informed choices about their own care.
Because recovery isn't one size fits all.
Right, exactly. It's a journey. And everyone's journey is unique.
Absolutely. It really seems like the UK crisis team model provides a blueprint for, like, a more humane and effective system?
It does. It shows us a way to make mental health care more compassionate, more accessible, and ultimately more successful.
You know, as we've been going through all this, there's been this kind of underlying theme, I think, a guiding principle almost, that seems to be at the heart of the crisis team approach.
You're right, there is. What would you say it is?
Well, I think it's this deep respect for, like, human dignity.
Yeah.
And autonomy.
Yeah.
It's not just about providing the services, you know. It's about doing it in a way that honors the person, their worth, their right to make choices about their own life.
Exactly. Exactly. Crisis team members, they meet people where they're at, no judgment.
Yeah.
They offer empathy, support. They create a space where people feel heard, you know, understood and empowered to take charge of their own recovery.
It's that human connection again, which is so powerful.
It is, especially in a crisis. Yeah. And it's about recognizing that everyone's path is different. Recovery isn't a straight line.
No, it's not.
It takes patience, understanding, and just constant support.
And that seems to be at the core of what crisis teams do.
Yeah.
You know, they walk with people through those really tough times, offering not just the clinical expertise, but that real human connection, compassion.
It's powerful stuff.
It is. We're going to take a short break, but when we come back, we'll talk about what all this means for you, our listener, and how you can connect these insights to your own life. Okay, so we've really gone deep on UK crisis teams, the history, how they're structured, the impact they have, the challenges they face. But let's bring it all home now. What does this actually mean for you listening to this?
You know, this whole deep dive, it's a good reminder that no one has to face a mental health crisis alone. If you're struggling or you know someone who is, there's a whole system out there to help.
Yeah, and one of the things that really stuck with me is that we tend to think of crises as these huge dramatic things, but it's not always like that, is it?
Not always.
Sometimes it's more like a slow burn. The pressure keeps building. You feel overwhelmed. You don't know where to turn.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important to understand what crisis teams do. They're not just for those big dramatic moments. They're there for those early signs, too, when you realize, okay, I need some help, but you're not sure what to do.
It's like knowing that safety net is there. A team of people who know what they're doing, ready to listen, assess the situation, and point you in the right direction.
Right. And don't forget those 24/7 support lines we talked about. They're there for a reason. Don't hesitate to reach out, even if you're not totally sure if it's a crisis or not.
Absolutely. And I think another big takeaway here is that taking care of your mental well-being is just as important as taking care of your physical health. Right. I mean, we wouldn't ignore like chest pains or a cough that won't go away. Mental health deserves the same attention.
I completely agree. Paying attention to how you're feeling mentally, noticing those warning signs, and getting support when you need it, that can prevent things from spiraling out of control.
It can. It really can. And for those of you who are supporting someone through a mental health crisis, remember, you're not alone either. There's help out there for you. Resources to help you navigate everything, understand what your loved one is going through, and learn how to support them in the best way.
There are. Support for families and carers is so crucial. And don't underestimate the power of just listening, you know, being there for them with compassion and connecting them with professional help when they need it.
It really is about that human connection, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Well, it's clear that these crisis teams are doing amazing work, not just in terms of responding to crises, but also empowering people and building resilience.
They're really changing how we think about mental health care. It's not just a medical model anymore. It's more holistic, person-centered, recognizing how everything's connected, mental, emotional, social well-being.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one message we want to leave our listeners with today?
I think it comes down to hope. There is hope, there is help, and recovery as possible. Whether you're struggling yourself or supporting someone who is, you're not alone. There are people and resources out there to help you on this journey.
Beautifully said. And if our listeners could take away just one action item from this whole episode, what would it be?
Take that first step. Reach out. Connect with the resources that are available. Check out the NHS website. Look into organizations like Mind. Or even just talk to a friend, a family member, someone you trust. Knowledge is power, right? Understanding what's out there is the first step to taking control of your mental well-being.
And remember, even small steps can make a big difference. You don't have to do it all at once. You're not alone in this. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into UK crisis teams. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and take care of yourselves.